Shabbat shalom. I am outraged. I am angry. There was a shooting at a kosher marketplace this week, right in our backyard in Jersey City, targeting Jews. Leah Ferenz, mother of three, co-owner of the grocery store, was killed, along with 24-year-old rabbinical student Moshe Deutsch, who had been shopping in the store, as well as a Latino store worker named Douglas Miguel Rodriguez. Earlier, police detective Joseph Seals was killed upon confronting the assailants in a cemetery. The response to this dramatic shooting has been so meek, so small. I am outraged. I am angry. And you should be too. Anti-Semitism has been steadily rising over the past few years. This year alone, we have had 193 incidents of anti-Semitic acts reported here in New York City alone. This is a wake-up call, though shofar has sounded. As Rabbi Hirsch so often warns us, we must never be complacent about freedom. Freedom is hard won and must be protected. We need to be vigilant in guarding our rights. Anti-Semitism expresses itself broadly in different ideologies and groups. We see it from the right, looking like a neo-Nazi marching in Charlottesville, or a white supremacist shooter in Pittsburgh or in Poway. We see it from the left, looking like Jewish participants banned from the Dyke Marts in Chicago because they had rainbow stars of David on their banners. We see it looking like NYU's Students for Justice in Palestine slipping bogus eviction notices under the doors of 2,000 student rooms at Palladium Residence Hall, the residence widely believed to house the largest number of Jewish students. We see anti-Semitism coming from the actions or inactions of governments. For example, last year in France, Sarah Halimi, a 65-year-old retired physician and kindergarten teacher, was killed by her neighbor who savagely beat her and threw her off her balcony. A couple of weeks ago, a judge dropped the murder charges against Halimi's killer on the grounds that he had been smoking pot at the time of the killing. That he got off with no repercussions is unconscionable. We see the face of anti-Semitism in the thinly veiled, ungrounded criticisms of Israel. To be sure, many criticisms of Israel are certainly not anti-Semitic, rather are grounded in real concern for helping to make the state a beacon of moral ethics and Jewish values. That said, Israel presents an easy target for Jew haters, such as the founders of the BDS movement, whose raison d'etre is the destruction of the Jewish state. In 2019 alone, there were 18 United Nations resolutions against Israel, as compared to 7 total against other countries combined, including only one against Syria, which gassed its own people, and only one against North Korea, which arguably has the worst human rights record in modern history, prioritizing developing nuclear weapons over providing safe water and food for its citizens, who are routinely taken away to labor camps for political crimes. In the face of this and more, the disproportionate UN resolutions against Israel suggest anti-Semitism at work. Anti-Semitism shows itself in many different varieties among many different populations. I am always asked, what can we do about the rise in anti-Semitism? The short answer is we need to fight it on every level, in every place, with everything that we have. And the best way to do this is not alone. We have many friends among us who will speak out on our behalf. For example, Over the last year, since the shooting at Pittsburgh's Tree of Life Synagogue, their neighbors, the Calvary Episcopal Church, welcomed and supported them and have opened their sanctuary so they would have a place to worship on the high holy days. We are grateful for such loving support of such allies, Christian, Muslim, and more. But we need many more friends, many more people to speak out, many more people to act. When one of us is hurt, all of us are hurt. It's a myth to think that antisemitism only hurts Jews. Hate has no boundaries. Like a fire that begins with a spark and spreads from field to field, one cannot control what it will burn. We need to build authentic and lasting relationships with allies who will support us and who we will support, ethical human to ethical human. And there is a more insidious and less obvious aspect to this as well that we need to sort out. We need to look at ourselves. Are we holding any biases that are contributing to the lack of unity in the broad Jewish community? We have to ask ourselves, why was there not more outrage from Jews about what happened this week in Jersey City at the kosher marketplace? Why has there not been more outrage from Jews about the many incidents this year of violence against Jews who are visibly identifiable by their clothing and head coverings? I bet many of us didn't even know that there had been so many, 193 anti-Semitic incidents in New York City alone this year. And we need to question, why did so many of us not know? There are a number of reasons for this that I can think of, and tonight I'd like to focus on two. First, we internalize unconscious cultural biases and prejudices. There are many different ways to be a Jew. This is a great strength to us and has helped us thrive from generation to generation. However, in the modern world, where we can have our own micro communities, we often find ourselves separated from the whole of the Jewish people, only interacting with other Jews who don't challenge our sense of Jewish identity. What's more, in America, the push to blend in with the dominant culture is strong. The dominant cultural message is, be proud of your Jewish heritage, but don't be too Jewish. Two, the powerful urge for self-protection can lead us to unconsciously separate ourselves from other Jews. When reacting to violence against Jews, we encounter an instinct to differentiate ourselves from other Jews who seem to be targeted by violent aggressors. In this way, we feel as if we have escaped from danger ourselves. We reason, we live away from where the shooting happened. Or we reason, our brand of Judaism is different from theirs. This is the least sophisticated, most simplistic kind of reasoning, but is a powerful driver when left unchecked. It's the same protective instinct that comes into play when we hear that someone has died and we find ourselves asking, how old was he? Or was she ill? We may not even realize that in the moment we ask these questions, we are trying to differentiate ourselves out of an instinct to feel protected, when in reality, we know we are all part of humanity with the same existential parameters. The small town where I grew up was right next to a small city and had exactly three synagogues in it, one Reform, one Conservative, and one Orthodox. I took it for granted that a fair number of liberal Jews, including my family, affiliated with the Orthodox synagogue. There was something pretty wonderful about being one of the liberals among the Orthodox. I had the opportunity to engage, really engage, with Jews who wore their Judaism different from me. At 14 years old, I was singing in public at local talent shows and at Holocaust commemorations. And one day, a Lubavitcher man in my shul took me aside and explained to me why it was inappropriate for me to sing in public where men could hear me because of the prohibition of women singing in front of men called Kol Isha. The idea here is that a woman's voice would be too arousing to men. I thought this was ridiculous and completely dismissed his suggestion that I stop singing. But I have thought back to that brief encounter many, many times. And in recent years, I am even a little touched by that conversation, because that man talked to me out of a deep concern for upholding a kind of religious position that he believed in. He wasn't rude. He didn't act like we were enemies. And after I told him I would keep singing in public, he didn't write me off. In fact, the younger generation of his family are my friends. They are also Lubavitcher and live in Teaneck. And while we don't see each other often, when we do, we feel the warmth of reconnecting with old friends. Many of us don't have the chance to mix with Jews who are different than ourselves, who may not even respect our choices or ways of practicing Judaism, and vice versa. I know that these folks don't really believe in a kind of Judaism that I represent. The mere fact that I am a woman rabbi is a challenge to their way of practicing Judaism. But I am able to talk with them about what their rabbi says over Shabbos, and about beautiful new musical settings of prayers that I've heard. Yet we live in a time when individuality is valued above community. We cherish the idea of personal choice, but building strong communities entails compromise. It involves trying to see each other's perspectives, even when they go against the grain, even when they seem at odds with our own. It's reaching for the tenuous, fragile connections and building upon them like a braided rope. It's only when we put the many strands together that it becomes strong. Some of us are really excellent at building community between Jews and have been for decades. I think of the people at Jewish Federation and the Jewish Committee Relations Council and many more. Yet having a strong Jewish community is not a given. It is not to be taken for granted. We cannot be passive. All Jews are our people, our family. And just like any other family, we need to support and care for one another despite our differences. When we make the effort, the reward far surpasses any personal concessions we make along the way. Any attack on a Jew is a personal attack. We belong to each other. We are each other's support, protectors, and defenders. We are family. And we must look at the ways our differences enhance our community instead of how they separate us. We must join together to fight against hate.